The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
It's been a few years since I stood next to Steve Gibson. What was it, 1974? Was it? Yeah, was it really? Nomex 3, was it?
No, it was 1 and 2. I was the keynoter for number 1, and then I spoke. I think Leo keynoted number 2, and I spoke at number 2.
Chicago, right?
No.
Think
no,
again.
The first one was in Iowa.
Yeah. And the second one was in a different place.
That's right. It was in Iowa also, yes.
Yeah. Well, it was still in Iowa.
There was no smell of fresh paint for the second one. Yeah,
that is true, yes.
The tennis courts that day, or, you know, that morning.
Well, having to move the venue after, what was it, I think September 11th, we had to reshuffle things and ended up going to a gym club type of venue.
That's right. It was not long after September 11th that I remember Lori was like all freaked out. It's like, oh, now, you know, I mean, well, all the airlines were shut down and closed. Yeah.
But you still came out.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to, and it was a great time.
I just remember watching people gather around you, like, and I was reminded of the scene in Toy Story. You know, where I think Buzz Lightyear falls into the middle of the alien things, and everyone, all the aliens come running up and, you know, start, woo, that's exactly what happened with you.
Well, you really did draw an amazing crowd, and always have.
Yeah, well, now the event's in Seattle, so, and that's where it is at this point in time, and it's a same kind of crowd, but we're doing different things. Well, slightly different.
And do you think, are there, you know, being a Seattle techie zone instead of Iowa, I mean, you had people really, like, you know, coming a long way to get to the number one, I'm blanking on the name. Ah, Locker Gnome, no, no, Gnomedex, yeah, the very first Gnomedex. So, like, you know, more people in Seattle, I would think, because it's like a major computer town.
Well, we keep the audience just, I mean, relatively small, but it was a lot easier sell to say, hey, come to Seattle, than it was, say, come to Des Moines.
Yeah, especially for people who get too much sun, as we do.
Well, yeah, of course. you're pretty close to where we are right now.
It was about an hour drive for me, so, you know, that's why I'm here, is that it was like, okay, it's, you know, it's a fun show to be at, but I wouldn't have flown here for it.
So what is, and I know you've got a couple of projects brewing, but what is the most recent thing that you've released onto the net?
Well, if we don't look just at software, I would say that, you know, the thing I'm most excited about is the Security Now podcast that I'm doing with Leo Laporte. We do it every week. We just did yesterday number 13 on how to really, really secure your wireless network so it's virtually impenetrable. So, and we do 4 a month, so we're in our 4th month. And, you know, we've got a whole bunch of material planned in the future, and we're getting a great bunch of feedback from it. So I think people are really liking it.
And what about software?
At the moment, I'm deep in the middle of working on a custom podcast recording VoIP client. It's not really security related. I had plans for the summer that I ended up pushing back further and further. I have plans for 2 more leak test programs because there's still problems with personal firewalls that I want to deal with. NAT routers are becoming very popular, and there's a bunch of stuff like, you know, the universal plug and play and other issues that NAT routers have I want to deal with, but I want to have a good way of recording our Security Now podcast, and I looked around, couldn't find anything out there that was, you know, what I wanted, so I'm writing one.
And what is going to make it different from Project Gizmo, from Skype, from Google Talk, from any other VoIP client that's currently out there?
I didn't write those.
Okay, but beside the obvious, what might you offer?
It offers two things. Well, 3 things if you count security. First of all, Skype is not convincing, like, studio-grade quality. There's no reason that the voice over IP, or VoIP, as you call it, shouldn't... I mean, somebody over voice over IP with the bandwidth we have available now should sound exactly like somebody in the studio. There should be no difference. So super high quality is the first thing. The second thing is none of them are super error-tolerant about packet loss over the Internet. If packets are delayed or lost, you end up with that same effect you get with a cell phone, sort of that oingo boingo sort of, you know, robotic sound because of the way the voice codecs work. So my tool, which is not really, we're sort of calling it iSpeak, ISPEAQ, which stands for Internet Speech, Private Encrypted, Anonymous, and Quality. You know, it's a stretch, but you know that's the working name at the moment. So it'll be super high quality and completely tolerant of any. Your arm's getting tired, isn't it? Of any, of any internet outages, and also, I mean, super military grade security. If you want to have a conversation that no government can eavesdrop on, this thing will do it for you too. So I'm going to write that.
And it's going to be huge, like in terms of a.
And it's going to be about 25K bytes. And
see, I was going for that. That's absolutely gigantic. You can't even fit that on a floppy disk.
I am writing it all in assembly language.
And, of course, you're going to have a nice big record button right there so that it's easy to record to a file?
Well, yeah, the whole idea is to get a perfect recording of a trans-internet conversation or conference. It'll be able to do conferencing also. So, you know, it'll for anybody who wants to do podcasts or interviews over the net and they want to have, like, you know, not have it sound like it was over the net, this is what they can use. Oh, and it'll be free.
Oh, okay, that's nice to hear. What about taking it to the next level and allowing people to push either?
There is no next level.
Well, no, there is a next level.
File transfer.
Okay,
too.
There we go.
Because peer-to-peer file transfer. I'm always wanting like to get a file from someone or to send some. You know, I want to set up a server or give them a URL or anything. It's just like no, I just want my computer to hook to your computer, and it'll do NAT transversal, so both people can be behind NAT routers and don't need to open up any ports or security holes or anything, and it'll still be able to transfer in either direction.
What about file pushing, as in pushing an RSS feed up to a server so that you've got an all-in-one podcast conversation solution right there?
Would that be good?
Yeah, that would be very nice.
Okay.
Oh, is that easy? Well, okay. So while we're asking...
Let me write that down.
Well, no, it would make sense. If you've got the record feature, to be able to use a codec to transcode to MP3 and then just push the file... And I mean the actual audio file as well as the RSS feed up to whatever server, whatever directory, and you basically basically you've got a podcast in a simple client.
Well, isn't that what all these people here are trying to do?
Yeah, but Steve, come on. who am I going to turn to? You know, when I say, you know what, I wish it would just do this.
Theirs isn't 25K bytes, is it?
Exactly. Well, it costs about 25K bytes, and I ain't talking. You know, I'm talking large. I'm not talking small.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
You know, you could definitely do a lot, I'm sure, for a lot of podcasters out there who are recording. I'd certainly use it.
Nobody should be paying for this stuff. It ought to be free.
No, why do you say that?
No, not the content. The tools.
Well, I mean,
the tools are
either one.
The tools are going to be free. None of this is hard. Why charge money?
Because no one else is really doing it. So now that we've got someone that's kind of doing it, I know who to ask.
Well, you got it.
Now I'm going to be emailing you like, Steve-O, hey.
This feature. No problem.
I wish this was green. And there, oh, it's green.
Oh, that's right. That's your color for Locker Gnome, isn't it? It'll be green.
Yeah, oh, God. No. Dear God,
it'll
no.
Be like, remember Zone. Remember
Seafoam.
Remember Zone Alarm Orange?
Yes.
Oh,
oh yeah.
God.
It's pretty bad.
Yep.
So you've still you've continued to develop SpinRite.
SpinRite is staying alive. It pays all the bills. It's the reason everything else can be free. Is that, you know, people are still having problems with hard drives. Hard drives are crapping out on them. I have a really neat testimonials page where people write to us, and they're just like, they lost like their family's photo albums, all their college theses, or whatever. I mean, they're just, you know. People say, hey, why, you know, SpinRite's $89, hard drives are $60, so how does it make sense? Except that the content now is what matters, and hard drives still are dying all the time. SpinRite remains, actually now it's pretty much the only, you know, user, do-it-himself, don't have to send it off for $2,500 to some recovery company, data recovery tool.
Knock on wood, I've never had a massive hard drive failure.
You know who to call when you do.
Yes, and it would be you. Although, I don't know, I would probably email more than I would call.
Well, you can call.
I could call?
I'll take your call.
Oh. Okay. So you're not going to say, oh, it's that Perillo character. I'll just block it here with this little thing.
Be my pleasure.
Oh, to block me or to take the call?
Take the call.
Okay. So, I got to ask you. I'm going to put you on the spot. You probably already thought about this thing. The Sony... blow up with rootkits has got a lot of people concerned.
Not on the spot. Yeah.
What do you think?
Depending upon how current people are with the news, we've now confirmed that it is also spyware, and that it phones home continuously every time anybody who has this installed plays any of the discs. It reports to Sony that the disc ID that they're playing, so it's doing that. And Kaspersky Labs yesterday in their email announcement has found the first backdoor Trojan using the Sony rootkit to hide.
No.
It renames any file that starts with $sys$ is hidden immediately, and there is a backdoor Trojan that is named $sys$drv.exe, and it immediately disappears if you've got the Sony DRM, the digital rights management technology, installed on your machine. It's just a disaster.
That's big.
Three lawsuits are in the works. There's an ambulance chasing company in L.A. that, I mean, they're suing everybody. They're suing HP and Toshiba and my grandmother and Sony. And apparently the government of Ireland is now looking into whether
it caused the potato famine.
Well, I mean, it's actually in violation of a lot of laws. I mean, this is illegal what they're doing. So I'm really glad for it from the standpoint of anybody else who was even thinking about using this technology. I mean, you know, I guess the Neil Diamond 12 Greatest Hits album is that it's hot. Actually, it's the number one CD on Amazon right now. When I want to infect myself with a Sony DRM rootkit, it's the one I bought because, of course, you know, Neil's from my era. And it's one of the discs. It's one of the discs that is infected. It's waiting at home. I'm going to infect myself this weekend, which is not something you hear every day, and you know, track this stuff down. And then next week, in the next week's Security Now podcast, I'm going to show people how to just add a line to their host's file in order to block this thing. You might want it on your computer, but you don't want it to be used. You certainly don't want it phoning home. You know, they say, oh, no, are you sure it's phoning home? We don't think it's phoning home. It's phoning home. And we've done packet captures. I want to see what domain it's looking up and then block that with the host file.
It's obviously big news. The ramifications are huge. Do you expect Microsoft to respond at all? They've got the malicious software removal tool.
I think it's really going to be interesting to see. I mean, I have no idea what they're going to do. You know, they in the past, they have bowed to commercial interests and removed things that were, like, in the gray area. I mean, this is not a hacker, you know, malignant, you know, black hat rootkit in the traditional sense. But, you know, it's a bad thing, and it's already being abused by malware and used to hide itself. It's got the problem of the fine print in the end user agreement saying, oh, the EULA that you agree to install this says that it can be removed. But nothing Sony has provided will remove it. Now, if you go to their site, give them your email address through a web form, they'll send back something to you that gives you a link where you can go to the evil people who actually created this thing. It's XCP something, or XCP-Aurora.com, an outfit in the UK that thought this was a good idea. I have a feeling they've changed their minds.
I think the Sony president was on record when he said that nobody should really care about this rootkit thing. And you bring up a word, you know, hackers, this isn't black hat. But should we be treating Sony any differently if this is a black hat type of tactic?
Well, I guess, you know, it wouldn't have ever bitten me, because if I stuck a CD into my computer and I got an end user license agreement, you know, I would say decline. You know, I'm not agreeing to a copyright notice and licensing terms to install malware on my computer. Now, a lot of people who are security conscious have auto start turned off already. So they would have stuck the disk in, and they wouldn't have had the auto run kick in and install this stuff from scratch. So there's certainly, it's easy enough to avoid this. I know that, you know, in reading the blogs on the net, there are people who are furious at Sony. They're saying, well, I was going to buy a big screen, you know, 100-inch something or other, but now I'm going to boycott Sony. It's like, well, you know, Sony's so big, I know they had no malicious intent. I mean, half of my home is got Sony labels all over it. You know, that's not changing. I think this has been a lesson to them to be very careful about what they buy from third parties. And also to the consumer that, you know, if something pops up a screen and wants permission from your computer, you need to think twice before you say, oh, yeah, install this on my machine.
Now, in what you've seen with Windows Vista coming out, do you think Microsoft's going to be doing enough now, including the anti-spyware product, which is now called Windows Defender, as well as some antivirus software? So are they just still covering the basics and requiring you to still rely on third-party products?
I think, given what I've seen, they still are. Because despite the fact that the anti-spyware, you know, removal kit that they've had so far has been useful, the standard wisdom is to use Adaware and SpyBot Search and Destroy and the Microsoft tool. Those are like the three musketeers, which pretty much covers everything. Microsoft definitely misses things, but then so do the others. So it's really not the case that you can just use any one tool. I would love to see, of course, Windows getting its act together even further, tightening itself down and being a much more secure platform. But you just can't do that now without breaking so many things. Microsoft is unwilling to do so.
What do you use as your web browser?
I still use IE. However, my IE has a button that's never been published publicly called Trust Puppy, which I wrote. The way I run IE, its security is bolted down completely. Scripting is turned off. Everything is turned off. Nothing. I mean, it's just like a naked browser. On my toolbar is a little red button, like a stop sign, reminding me that right now it's all locked down. Basically, what this is this is a simple way of putting sites you visit into your trusted sites zone. So if I go somewhere and the page doesn't work, I just click the button, it turns into a green check mark, and that's already added that site to the trusted zones list, and then the whole site's functional. So as I'm surfing around the net, everything is completely safe. Nothing can affect me. Then I decide if I go to a site which isn't fully functional, and if it looks like I can trust it and it's worth, you know, lowering my defenses, I click the button and then I can use the site fully. And it works great.
So why do you keep that puppy caged up?
I just haven't gotten around to releasing it yet.
Is it not production quality? Or, I mean, it seems like it works.
All of my employees and I have been using it for about a year now, and it's great.
So why not unleash it?
I never did the documentation for it.
Okay, so
there's kind of a web page for it. I don't know. I just sort of...
Why not? Okay, so you still have your news group hierarchy. You still got people in there. Wouldn't they be happy to write documentation for it?
I like to write the documentation.
Adds that personal touch to it.
I'll get around to it. With the latest version of IE, there was something Microsoft did that made it easier to add non-trusted sites to the trusted sites list. So I've like, well, okay, maybe it's easy enough. I don't know. Okay, I just sort of internal things, but I am using IE and never get infected. And they've really made XP's IE with Service Pack 2 a lot better. I mean, you can't get an ActiveX control installed unless you're warned and you deliberately say yes. So, I mean, you know, they're making progress.
Do you think that's helped?
I couldn't guess. I mean, the problem is that, I mean, it's a problem we've always had with users not knowing if they should say yes or no. I mean, obviously, nobody would install the Sony DRM rootkit on their machine if they declined the license agreement. But they're saying, yes, hurt me. And Sony does. Similarly, if in the old zone alarm days, the question always was, okay, well, when something pops up and says it wants to access the internet, should I let it or not? I mean, people don't know. And so similarly, even though Microsoft is like trying to do what they can to promote the idea of, okay, you're only going to get this thing installed in your machine if you want it, people don't know if they should or not. And you can certainly, you know, permit a malicious ActiveX control to install itself and not be happy that you did.
You've never installed an ActiveX control like that on accident?
I haven't. I don't think I go to like bad places.
Oh, come on. What's the worst website you've ever visited? And mine doesn't count.
No, I can't tell you that.
Oh, okay. That would be an untrusted puppy, as it were. So we can look forward to this new, what'd you call it, iSpeak?
iSpeak, or maybe what it's called, I'm not sure.
You'll likely get sued from iApple.
It'll be in a few months.
Few months?
Yeah.
All right. So do you have beta testers who are playing with it right now?
The speech end has been bounded on by our news group in a little thing that I released a couple weeks ago, and it sounds great, and now I'm nailing down all the security side, and then I do the network side. Then I'll start using it for the Security Now podcast while I'm, like, adding all the other, like, backfill features.
So you're not necessarily going after Skype and Google Talk, as you said. You're just going to throw it out there and hope for some adoption, or maybe if it happens?
The thing that annoys me about Skype, for example, is that it's free, but, you know, they're trying for it not to be free. You get the little annoying things like, oh, do you know that for $29.95 you can add Skype in or Skype out or whatever? You know, I mean, they're free, but they're trying to kind of twist you into their paid-for model. I don't have a paid-for model, so mine will really be free. And, no, I'm not competing with them. If only 5 people in the world ever use it, that'll be fine. I'm writing it for myself and for you, Chris.
Well, you know, if you add the features I'm talking about, you'll have more than 5 people using it, maybe closer to about 5 million.
Cool. That would be great.
And I think you should probably go because I've taken up so much of your time.
My voice is beginning to go.
No, I don't want to take too much of your time.
It was a pleasure, Chris. Great to see you again.
And likewise, Steve.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.